This episode is brought to you by the American Homebrewers Association, a community of more than 40,000 fermentation aficionados. Join the association or renew your membership by January 4th and choose a free brewing book to add to your library. Details at homebrewersassociation.org. That's homebrewersassociation.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, December 3rd, 2020. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, longtime listener Greg McGill from Brewocracy in Hamilton, New Zealand, joins us to talk about our collaborative effort to brew a low-gravity but very hoppy and delicious rye and wheat beer. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs and our brewer's logbooks. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Financial supporters will see an early release this week of the Basic Brewing video episode featuring Steve Wilkes's Apple Wine. Steve of stevesbrewshop.com. He basically gives a masterclass on how he made this delicious wine. Why is it a wine and not a cider? Well, Steve took some organic apple cider or apple juice and added a bunch of dextrose to boost the gravity. So it's really more of what Steve calls a country wine, you know, when you take fruit and then add some sugar to it to boost up the gravity. In the episode, Steve goes into detail about, how he made it, the nutrients that he added, the clarifying and the stabilization steps and the conditioning to add body to the apple wine. It's been a long time in the making. Steve's been talking to me about it for a long time, and it really is delicious. It really was worth the wait. So it's something that went very well with the Thanksgiving holiday. Speaking of which, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving if you celebrate it. If you don't, even if you don't live in the United States, well, why not? Might as well. It's an excuse to make a pie or two and cook some special family dishes that maybe you don't eat but a time or two each year. In our house, it was my sister's broccoli, rice, and cheese casserole that my son Will made for us. He's learning how to cook, so I'm glad for that. The main course this year was a turkey breast, a boneless turkey breast that I smoked. When Susan first brought it home from the store, you know, I asked her to bring home a turkey breast. And I was anticipating this big old, you know, bone-in turkey breast. But she brought home this little thing. It was a 3-pound boneless turkey breast, you know, bound up in a net like a roast. And it looked so small compared to what I was expecting. However, it was only three of us for the holiday, so 3 hours on the smoker at 250 degrees Fahrenheit or 121°C, smoked with hickory. It was perfect. It was great. We're going to have to do that again. I also made a pecan pie and a coconut cream pie. Whew, man. Our friends at friends and sponsors Ricky and Kelly from Groenfell Meadery in Vermont had some very fun news this week. Kelly appeared in a video on social media with a baby bump. There's going to be another addition to the Groenfell family. Very exciting. A little Nora is going to be a big sister. I also learned recently of another upcoming addition to what I consider the extended Basic Brewing family, but I don't know if they're ready to make that public. Much needed good news. Anyway, Ricky also says Groenfell is launching their Groenfell Winter Warmer Mead based on an 18th century wassail. Ricky says it's Groenfell's most requested mead of all time and will be the first time that you can get it outside the state of Vermont, delivered to you, in fact, if you live in the Groenfell delivery area. This winter warmer is made of sweet honey and maple syrup, or syrup, depending on where you live, bright blood orange along with warm cinnamon, vanilla, nutmeg, and cloves in a collaboration with Runamuck Maple. And a portion of the sales of each bottle goes to charity. So, what a great holiday beverage and gift idea. Check out the Groenfell Winter Warmer and all other delicious honey-based beverages at growing family-owned, Groenfell.com. That's Groenfell. And also be on the lookout for some very exciting news from our friends and sponsors at Imperial Organic Yeast. Casey's told me what it is. It's something that Imperial has been working on for a very long time, and they're almost ready to announce it. So follow Imperial Yeast on the socials for details when that comes out. In the meantime, I've added another recipe to our small but growing recipe section of basicbrewing.com. If you go to basicbrewing.com/recipes, you can see the recipe for my 15-minute Saison brewed with B56 Rustic from Imperial. Man, I need to brew that beer again. It's an extract beer made with Bavarian wheat and Gold Pils Vienna liquid malt extract and golden candy syrup. The wort is only boiled for 15 minutes, so it's super easy, with a German Mandarina Bavaria hops at the beginning of that short boil. The Imperial Rustic Yeast really brings out some fun flavors to pair with those hops. And of course, I didn't use a starter because my stir plate is dusty. I don't use it anymore to make starters for moderate gravity 5-gallon batches. Imperial's industry-leading pitch rate of 200 billion cells per easy open package means that my airlock is usually bubbling before bedtime. Couple that with a terrific technical support and customer service, and Imperial Organic Yeast just can't be beat. Ask your local homebrew shop about Imperial Organic Yeast and follow them on the socials for big news coming up. Check them out at imperialyeast.com. That's imperialyeast.com. Let's take a quick look into the mailbag with an on-topic question from listener Doug. Doug writes, when it comes to the 15-minute boils, in general, do you think your doubled-up bittering hop additions at the beginning of the boil are also serving as a flavoring addition, or should I add some flavoring hops at about 10 minutes? Well, thanks, Doug. You definitely do get a lot of flavor from the hop addition at the beginning of that 15-minute boil, along with about half the bitterness of a 60-minute addition, or at least according to the hop formulas. Half the bitterness per the amount of hops that you put in there. I didn't add any hops at the end of the boil for the 15-minute Saison recipe because of the style, but you certainly could. If you're making a nice hoppy pale ale, for example, I wouldn't add hops at 10 minutes with a short boil. If you're adding them at 15, I'd move the rest of the hop additions to either flame out or a hop stand after the boil, maybe even at a reduced temperature after the end of the boil, to bring more hop flavor and aroma with less of a bittering charge. It's a good strategy for, say, you know, New England IPA-ish beers, and a really fun concept to play with, especially because you don't need to boil the extract for a full hour, just long enough to sanitize it, hence the 15-minute boil. However, with our hop sampler series, you know, I don't even bring the wort to a full boil, just right to boiling temperature. You know, just when it starts to like bubble up a little bit, I turn off the heat, and I only steep the hops for 10 minutes, just off the flame. So you could just do a no boil with extract, and we've also done short boils with all grain batches too. So the old rules definitely don't apply that say you absolutely have to boil a wort for a full hour. You know, make up your own rules and be sure to take notes to ensure that you can learn from your results. Appreciate that, Doug. And by the way, a Basic Brewing Brewer's Logbook would be excellent for that note taking. And they also make great Christmas gifts. I usually get a lot more female names coming through the Basic Brewing store buying logbooks at this time of year. BasicBrewingShop.com. I'm just full of shameless plugs this week. Speaking of which, one more. Our friends and sponsors Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa are having a sale on money. A sale on gift certificates, which is essentially the same. During the holiday season, all gift certificates at highgravitybrew.com are 10% off, which makes it easy for Santa to indulge your brewing desires. You may choose to use your gift certificate on beer or wine kits, or ingredients, or to upgrade your home brewery and take the pain out of propane with a new electric brewing system like the Warthog Brew in a Bag system, featuring a spike kettle, solo brewing basket to replace your bag, a Blickman boil coil, a Riptide pump, and of course, the awesome Warthog EBC-130 controller. I myself have a Warthog EBC-130 controller, and I love it. It's like having a brewing partner with you there on the patio or wherever you brew to bring the strike water up to perfect temperature, maintain steady mash temps, and to hold a steady rolling boil, even on a cold and windy patio. HighGravityBrew.com has a wide range of brewing systems to fit your budget and needs, and a handy build-your-own brewing system page to let you custom configure one if you like. Head on over to family-owned and operated HighGravityBrew.com to pick out a gift certificate at 10% off this holiday season. HighGravityBrew.com. That's HighGravityBrew.com. Okay, Greg McGill deserves a medal. He's one of a handful of listeners who started listening way at the beginning, back in 2005, and is still with us for some reason. He reached out recently wanting to collaborate with me on a brew to be served to thirsty Kiwis at his Brewocracy Brewery in Hamilton, New Zealand. Greg McGill, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Oh, thanks, James. It's great to be here.
Yeah, this is up until now, your relationship with Basic Brewing Radio over the past 15 and a half years has been a one-way street. But now, for the first time, you get to talk back to me and I can respond. I assume that you talk to me all the time, you know, when you're listening to the podcast, you know, maybe correcting me on something stupid I say.
I was going to say, this might be dangerous territory. I mean, you know, I've sent a few emails over the years, but hey.
Oh, yeah. We've been corresponding for sure. Yeah. And in the beginning, I mean, you literally have been listening to the show since the beginning, back in July of 2005.
Yeah, I was having surgery at the time. So it was kind of something to, and I was looking for anything that was beer related, any beer podcasts. I was a keen home brewer at the time, and you know, I was just casting about for something to occupy myself while I lay in bed and stared at the ceiling. So I came across you guys, and I think Craft Beer Radio had also started up about that time. And one I came into about two or three episodes in, and the other one was just starting. So it was whichever of you came first, that was the one that I listened to right at the start. So
well, Jeff and Greg with Craft Beer Radio, they beat us by, you know, a month or so on iTunes.
That might have been it then. So,
yeah. But you know, we're, I think, and unfortunately, Jeff and Greg are taking, I hope, a temporary hiatus from posting. But I think that now this podcast could be one of, if not the longest, I'm fairly sure it's the longest running homebrewing podcast on iTunes, and maybe one of the longest running beer podcasts. I don't know. It's been a long time.
Yeah, I couldn't find anything else at the time, so I'm pretty sure you're right.
it's a ringing
that's
endorsement.
That's good enough to be official?
That's a ringing endorsement. Well, there wasn't anything else on.
Hey, but I've left it on for 15 years, so hey, there you go.
You're a glutton for punishment.
I'm a glutton for most things.
Well, it's, you know, I remember corresponding with you back then and, you know, getting emails. And back then it was like, wow, we got, you know, we've posted three episodes and so far we've gotten, you know, 300 listeners. You know, so it was a long time ago. And I remember corresponding with you and, you know, maybe a couple other folks. And it just was amazing because here I am, you know, standing in my closet recording this this podcast and putting it out there on this fairly new technology, and people around the world, you know, from the other side of the globe are communicating. And so that really opened up the door and opened up a lot of possibilities.
Yeah. The joy of the internet back then, eh?
Yeah. It was a lot more innocent place.
It was.
At least on the surface.
There weren't many comments to read.
Well, I appreciate your staying with us for so long, and we got to meet down in Nelson at the Homebrewers Conference a few years back, and that was a whole lot of fun. You reached out a while back wanting to collaborate. And you have gone. You're now a professional brewer. Tell us about what you're up to.
Well, first, I'm not sure I'm professional. You have to pay yourself before you're professional. But I have a professional brewery. Some people pay for the product. So yes, So we, as I say, we were kicking around the idea. I was quite happy being a home brewer. I didn't really want to go professional, but I was working in IT and getting less and less happy there, and I'd taken a year off to kind of evaluate and see what I wanted to do with my life, and ended up giving IT one more last go, working for the University of Auckland, and that was great. It was a good team, but I still didn't, just found myself not enjoying the work anymore. So along with my friend and business partner Phil, he sort of gave me a bit of a push, and others had given me pushes in the past and said, hey, well, all right, let's do this thing. So yeah, Brewocracy was born as a real entity after being contract brewed, small batch, almost a hobby that pays for itself since 2011. So yeah, it was pretty cool to finally fire up the big brew house in 2018 and open the tap room and start putting smiles on people's faces via the medium of beer. It was great.
And you're in Hamilton, is that right?
I am. Yeah. So we're about 90 minutes drive south of Auckland, which is New Zealand's biggest city. And that's, if you come visit, and you should, that's where you'll fly into. Well, maybe not right now, but yeah. Soon, we hope.
They won't let me.
No, real soon now. And yeah, so it's a short drive down, as long as the traffic's not terrible, which it sometimes is. And yeah, it's an interesting little place to be, in that it's not interesting. There's there's not much going on in Hamilton. So we sort of, this is where I was born, and I sort of thought, well, where better to try and revitalize the culture a little than my own hometown. So we started up the brewery here, and I've had a lot of thanks and people really happy with the fact that we did that, because they now feel like there is something quite cool happening in Hamilton. And they've come, a lot of people have come to see us. There's now been a couple of other breweries open up. There was one quite large brewery here, and they were sort of started by a hospitality company. So they had slightly different goals than we do. We're very much bringing the beer directly to the community, and they very much are about building an empire based on great beer. And it is great beer. I have nothing bad at all to say about them. But it's an interesting little town and getting more interesting by the day.
And where did the name Brewocracy come from?
Oh, well, Phil and I are political oddballs. We're kind of, libertarians not to the degree that you guys have your Tea Party people over there. I'll get hate mail if I say I identify with them. But we are very much small government. We love the idea of people being kind to each other and relying on each other, but that always being voluntary and not forced by the hand of government. And so we riffed on this theme a lot, and we came up with Brewocracy in that, we can kind of am I allowed to say take the piss? Is that an expression you guys have? extract the urine? we just like to play around with that. We mock the mechanisms by which government works. So a lot of our names are either corporate buzzwords or government-related, taxation-related, that sort of thing. So it's a gentle theme, but we like to poke the bear a little.
And that seems to fit in with the personality of some of the Kiwis that I've met. You don't want to get too proud, or somebody will take you down a peg. In good spirit.
Oh, very, very true. Although that's got a light side and a dark side too. There's very much a tall poppy syndrome, we call it here in New Zealand, where people really get stuck into those who have become quite successful, and there's a bit of resentment culture. Everything we do, we try to do with kindness and with our tongues firmly in our cheeks. We mean everybody well.
And what do you brew mostly?
I'm I'm a little bit famous in the beer scene in New Zealand for being a curmudgeon. I get a lot of people hassling me and you know, because I don't really jump onto trends. I'm not a fan of haze. I'm not a fan of throwing everything you can find in a 12% stout. And, you know, I think adjuncts have become the reason for beer rather than beer being the reason for beer now. It's like you have to be fun to have beer. And I'm just a believer in good, clean, well-made beer, and that's what I try to do, and largely in areas that other people aren't. So I kind of, you know, traditional English styles, traditional German lagers, that sort of thing. I mean, we do occasionally jump into the trend pool just because we've got a tap room, and sometimes that's what customers ask for. But yeah, I try and be a little bit different. It probably costs us a lot of sales, but it's, I can sleep at night.
you're being different by being more traditional.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like we're going to see a bit more of that in the near future. I'm already starting to see it a little bit around.
So what's your system like?
So we've got a 10-barrel, well, it's not quite 10-barrel. It's a 12-hectoliter, which is how we measure things when we're not using your weird freedom units. And so it's a 1,200-liter brew house into three conical fermenters. I've actually got six conical fermenters. So it's a double, one side's 24-hectoliter, one side's 12-hectoliter. And we can double batch into the bigger tanks. I'm not often using those. Those are for beers that, you know, when I know we've got a rush on, or when I need to produce something that I've pre-sold half of or something like that, but I still need it for the tap room, we do the double batches. The constraint on me is I've got one bright tank of each, so I'm always trying to, just about every day, I'm transferring, filtering, pump kegging. I've made a lot of work for myself, which is a challenge because there's really only me in the brewery. Mm. So, yeah, it's a busy week. It was a 7-day week. I finally got it to a 6-day week.
You only work part time during when you're not sleeping.
I've got a whole day off now.
When you're not sleeping, you work.
That's right.
That's the part. Well, you email me because you've also got a pilot system that you wanted to kind of play around with.
Yeah. So this is SS Brewtech, who are an American company. I believe most of the equipment's fabricated for them in China, but they do all the design, and they're very proud of their systems, and they should be. So when I was setting this place up, we bought this from our local homebrew store, which is, I think you've met those guys from Brew Shop when you were over. Yeah, Gavin and Peter. Really cool guys. They're just around the corner, and they're always happy to help me out with, you know, oh no, I've busted a fitting. I need a 1.5-inch valve quickly. So we do use freedom units for some things. And they will always, you know, they're always there for me. And so they sold me this piece of kit at a really good price. And it's just a little SS conical fermenter, SS brew kettle, and a mash and louder ton from them as well. And it's just it's all self-contained. It's nice and easy to clean and to use. It's got I've got a Blickman burner with it, so it, you know, really roars when it's going. And that just lets me knock out a half barrel at a time. If I want to test something, or say do a collaboration with a podcaster from the US, or you know, whatever we happen to be making, you know.
And you're able to do a brew in a bag as well.
Well, able is probably an interesting way to put it. The first time I tried it was with yours, and I'm sure we'll get to what a disaster that was later.
Spoiler alert.
I made myself some notes, and hopefully that won't happen again. So, yes, we can do brew in a bag.
Well, you say yours was disastrous, but our numbers kind of lined up, so I don't know. I don't know what that says.
Yeah,
about
that
my brewing.
That was deeply weird.
I think you did a better job than that. I'm gonna say that you did a better job than you thought. That way, you know, I won't look bad because.
I disagree, but I'll take it.
Now you approached me, and you know, I was thinking, what the heck. You know, I'm no expert in, you know, any, you know, recipe development or anything like that. But I have come up with these weird, you know, low gravity rye based recipes that, you know, nobody else, or, you know, I was the first to do them, and some other people have done them successfully. But you know, that's kind of what a bit of what I've been known for. So I said, hey, you know, what the heck? Let's do one of these little weird things. So we came up with a recipe that was wheat and rye and no barley whatsoever.
Yeah, and that was cool. And while you say you don't do recipe development, that's not necessarily what I was looking for. I was looking to capture the spirit of James Spencer Basic Brewing Radio. You know, let's capture some of these weird things that you do and see what we can do with it here. And I think we did that. It was really cool to do and really cool to be a part of.
Well, I was extremely flattered to and intimidated to be asked to participate. You know, but thank goodness for the pilot system. It was only a small batch.
It's gone, so they liked it.
Well, that's a good thing. So talk about. So you did a recipe based on my recipe, and then I did a clone of your recipe. So first of all, talk about your recipe.
So, yeah, I went back and watched your original video where you'd made this low alcohol, low gravity rye and wheat beer. And I was just struck with the rye wit name. How could I not use exactly the same thing? Even though, it, as you pointed out in the video, it's definitely not a rye wit. Whoops! Spoiler alert: there's a video.
Yeah, I wish I could remember, and maybe I'll go back and see if I can find the name of the listener or viewer who came up with that name, because I didn't come up with the name, and I need to find that out and give him credit. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, it was rye and it was wheat, and that was the whole extent of the recipe, and I think you thought at the time it was sort of 2.5%, and that just got my creative juices flowing. So all I did really was take your recipe based on what you did, pop it into Beersmith, which I've been using as a home brewer and a pro brewer for pretty much forever, and played around with it until I thought it would work on our system at the efficiencies that I have. Oh, how wrong I was, but we'll come to that.
So get into the specifics. What were the details?
Yeah, so it's 40%. So I'm using German best malts here. So we used the best rye malt from Germany. I don't know if it is the best, but that's the company name. There's 40% of that. And we had some, I normally would have used malted wheat. We had some Thomas Fawcett torrified wheat floating around the brewery, which I use for normally just to add a little bit of head retention. It brings a little bit of slightly toasty biscuit flavor. And that's New Zealand biscuit too, not American biscuit.
Like a cookie.
I'll let you get into that one later, James. I'm not starting any wars. the recipe guideline always says you should never use more than 10% torrefied wheat in a recipe. And I thought, well, recipes rules are made to be broken. So let's use 60% of it. So that's where the majority of our grist was that wheat. So it's 60-40 wheat rye. Along with that, we've got, you know, some boil hops. James's original was East Kent Golding, so I stuck with that. And that's where our boil IBUs all come from. And then I really wanted to have a big New Zealand and American hop presence just to signify the collaboration. So I just worked out roughly the IBUs I wanted from the Whirlpool and went with a big Nelson Sauvin charge in the Whirlpool to about, well, my calculated was about 10.4 IBUs, but the Whirlpool was slightly hotter than intended, so we probably got a little bit more bitterness than intended. And then we had a big Sauvin and Centennial dry hop, which was, you know, 250 grams of Nelson Sauvin in my case and 170 grams of Centennial. And that was a three-day dry hop. I find if you go any longer than that, especially on that small kit, it gets quite vegetal. So I just, 48 to 72 hours is sort of my limit for dry hopping. We don't have your great-looking imperial yeast here, at least not that I know of. So I used San Diego Super Yeast from White Labs, WLP090, which is a similar sort of a heritage, but kicked up a notch, I believe. What else did I do? Water treatment was pretty gentle. What did I do there? Sorry, I'm just looking at my recipe. Yeah, so we did go with a slightly higher sulfate to chloride ratio. I did kind of want to bring out the bitterness a bit, even though it was a very low alcohol beer. I was worried about the sweetness and the stickiness from the rye, and I kind of wanted to offset that sweeter mouthfeel with a little bit more bitterness. So we did aim for a sulfate to chloride ratio of around 1.8, which hop Beersmith tells me is slightly bitter, just delicate. But yeah, then I don't know, James, if you want me to get into the specifics of the brew day. It was kind of a funny story, but
well, let me go over the details of my take on it.
Sure.
My batch was 5 gallons of 19 liters, and I went in with 3 pounds or 1.4 kilograms of torrefied wheat. And this is the first time that I've used torrefied wheat in this recipe. I usually use malted wheat. And then I had 2 pounds or 900 grams of malted rye. And when I was mashing in or doughing in, I said, is the rye going to have enough, enzymatic or diastatic power to convert all of this? And so you had already done the recipe and it seemed to work. And so I went ahead and mashed for 90 minutes at 150 degrees Fahrenheit or 65 C. And then I used 1/2 ounce or 14 grams of EKG at 60 minutes. And then at flame out for a 5-minute hop stand, I did 2 ounces or 56 grams of Nelson Sauvin. And then after fermentation, I dry hopped with 3 ounces or 85 grams of Nelson Sauvin and 2 ounces or 56 grams of Centennial for 3 days, I believe. Used Imperial AO7 Flagship, which is just the Chico strain, I believe. Original gravity 1021, final gravity 1008, for an ABV of 1.7%. Oh, and I did use 4 grams of gypsum in the boil as well, just because that was what was recommended in the Bell's Two Hearted clone recipe that that I've been using, and it seemed to work. It seemed to bring out the hoppiness. So I'm not a big scientist when it comes to water calculations and water chemistry, as everybody knows who listens to the show. But that it seemed to work. So that was my take. So how did and my brew day, as you could see on the video that I posted as of this show, it was posted last week on Thanksgiving Day. My brew day went pretty well. How did yours go?
Yeah, thanks for the setup there, James. Not so well. So part of this was me doing brew in a bag for the first time with that amount of rye and wheat in the mix and no barley or anything. That was seemed to be the only way for it to be done. So I popped down to brew shop and had a chat to Gavin and got myself a nice big bag and then brought it back here and started to mash in and completely poured half of my grist all over the floor, scraped it up, put it back in. It's all going to be boiled, right? It'll be fine. This was after running it. I suddenly realized, of course, I haven't used the pilot system since before the brewery was set up. So I had no way of milling my grain except the giant 2 tons of an hour commercial mill that I've got here. So I ran the grain through that, trying to catch it all in a bucket and so that it didn't fall out the end of the auger all over the floor. I got that bit right. And then, everything else seemed to go mostly okay after that. I dove in, I hit my temperatures. I also had the same thought about diastatic power halfway through and went, huh. And strangely, you threw to me for that one saying, well, I'd done it and it worked. And I came back and thought, well, James has done this before and it worked. So we've created a feedback loop of poor science here, but we seem to have got away with it. I ran into the kettle, and this is where the trouble began. As I was running off, I popped into the office. I was trying to do the horror that is excise tax in New Zealand at the same time. So I was doing paperwork and answering a few emails, and vaguely over the sound of everything else that's always happening in the brewery, I could hear this trickling sound. So I ran back, and of course I'd left the whirlpool valve on the kettle open, so it was running, part of it was running down the drain, and of course it was the thicker, juicier part, the heart of the mash, if you like. So there's some beer that we'll never know what it might have been like. But yeah, I got the rest of it, and my OG was 1020 post boil, and my final gravity was 107 after boil, so it was, you know, there or thereabouts, 1.7%, same as yours. So we seem to have got away with it.
Yeah, your accident and my just normal brewing lined up. So
I don't know what that proves, but it proves something.
And of course, our water to grain ratio may be different, you know. So
of course,
there could be some variation there. I did start out with 8 gallons or 30 liters at the beginning of my process, and that's what I mashed in too. So together, you know, with the really super thin mash and then the, you know, the limited amount of malted rye in there, you know, conventional brewing wisdom would say that that's not going to work.
we need to get Marshall Schott up in here and get him to break this one down for us.
What, and then we'd have to get Google Docs and a triangle test and, you know.
But it'd be for science. It'd be fun.
That's right. Yeah. And at the end of it, it'll turn out that nothing makes a difference. So, you know.
We love you, Marshall. Please don't shoot us.
Let's take a quick break from talking to Greg to talk about our friends and sponsors at Tavor. If you listen to the show, you know about Tavor already. It's a way to select delicious craft beers that you may not be able to find in your area and have them delivered directly to you. It's not a beer of the month club where someone chooses beer for you. You only pay for the beer that you choose over the course of the month. Signing up for Tavor is free. Just create an account at Tavor.com. That's T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com. And download their iPhone or Android app. You'll receive notifications for 2 new beers each day that are available for purchase with in-depth tasting notes from Philip at Tavor. This month, look for selections from Eastern Market / Ferndale Project, North Park, Good Word Brewing, Falling Knife, Ingenious Brewing Company, and Barrel Culture Brewing and Blending. Mmm! If you're not interested in the beers that you see, no worries. Just skip the one that you don't want. However, when you see something that you do want, and you will, don't wait. Just click on it and add it to your crate. Your beer arrives fresh every few weeks, allowing enough time to fill a box and pay the least shipping. Why don't you check it out? It doesn't cost anything to sign up if you're just curious, and there is no obligation to purchase anything. In fact, if I can ask you a favor, go to Tavor.com, T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com, or download the app, and when you sign up, enter the promo code BASICBREWING, all one word, and you'll get $10 off your first shipment of $25 or more. Again, it's free to sign up, and there's no obligation to purchase. Sign up at Tavor.com, T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com, or with the Tavor app, and enter Basic Brewing as the promo code. So you... you had a keg of beer that you went. Well, first of all, should we? I think I want to play some of the audio from the Basic Brewing video episode with me and Steve, and we'll get our reaction to you know, tasting my batch, and then we'll come back and then ask you about how your patrons felt about it.
Well.
So here we go. We'll go back in time and listen to what Steve and I thought of the New Zealand Rye Wit.
Well, it's a mighty pretty little beer. And I have to confess that I had a glass of this with my lunch, so I'm a little ahead of you. Well, you've had this. I mean, I'm sure you have. But cheers. I had a glass at lunch, and it's really nice. How can you not like that?
Mm.
It's crisp. It's refreshing. It's got a great beat. It's easy to dance to.
It smells great.
Give it a 7. Yeah, it smells great. When you listed all the hops, I got a little scared. I mean, there's a lot of hops in here. And I was like, oh, brother, you know, what were you thinking? But this is great.
In fact, I tasted the wort before fermentation, and it tasted pretty bitter to me. And I got a little nervous about it myself. But... after fermentation, and even after, you know, 5 ounces of dry hopping, it I think it holds up really nicely. It's the body is a teeny bit light. And I usually use, instead of torrefied wheat, I usually use malted wheat. And I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not. But it's interesting that the 2 pounds of malted rye had enough diastatic power to convert itself and that extra 3 pounds of torrefied wheat.
And I don't mean this as a criticism at all, so don't take it that way. But the only thing that when I first sipped on it, I thought, oh, I wish it had just a little bit more body. But as I drank it over the course of a glass of it, I was like, no, this is just fine. This is great because it's so refreshing and it's so crisp and light. It's just unexpected. It's unexpected that it's as light as it is. But once your palate adjusts to it, it just takes about three good glugs, and you're like, oh, no, this is just right.
Yeah.
So...
I think it's not watery at all.
No, it's not.
It's just a teeny bit lighter in body than what I'm used to. And I think that it just takes a little... I think if you were to taste this against, say, a Miller Lite or one of those, ultra-low carb beers, this would be thick, in comparison.
Yeah, it definitely would. And, in fact, I drank a... Well, it was a PBR. I drank a PBR the other night, and it's okay. But this has got a lot more body, a lot more mouthfeel. It's actually a lighter beer in terms of the calories, I'm sure, and the alcohol, but a way better beer.
Yeah.
So I don't want to be sued by the PBR folks, but that's just a review. And boy, if I had my druthers, I'd rather drink this any day.
So there you go, Steve and I liked it. We liked the hop combination. I said in the episode that when I tasted the unfermented wort, it was like it seemed pretty bitter, and I was kind of scared by that. But by the end of the process, even with all those hops, in that low gravity wort, it came out. We think pretty darn good, and I'm sipping on some right now, and I like it quite a bit.
Good. Yeah, I was. When I watched I heard that little bit of audio you were talking about, it was very similar, except you guys seem to get a lot more hop out of yours. And I'd put that down to perhaps my system of hopping and dry hopping in a bag, which I don't do that in the big brewery, but I did do it in the pilot brewery because I don't have any filtration for the small one. So getting it out of there is a challenge. Hmm. I was a little disappointed with the subdued hop, but I loved the flavor and aroma that it gave. I thought the bitterness was about right for the beer. And again, I was not too surprised by that because that has been my experience with those yeasts and with that much hop. It always seems to pull quite a lot of bitterness out in the yeast. Hmm. So you never seem to end up with it as much in the beer. So I'm never afraid to overhop. Up front, it seems you get a little bit more oil out of those hops, and I like that. I agreed with just about everything you said. I found the body a little light, but that's to be expected at 1.7%, and certainly nothing that was a problem after quaffing a pint, which you can nicely do at 1.7%.
You boldly put it on tap and then left town.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. And what's worse, I left town to go drinking wine. I went. That was our labor weekend here, and I went away with my wife's sister and her husband, and we just went, and my wife's other sister, and we went over to the Hawke's Bay and popped around the wine trails, which my brother-in-law and I insisted we complement with a few breweries. But of course, it went on tap. That day, as luck would have it, I hadn't quite expected the keg it was going to replace to run out. And my bar manager was texting me saying, hey, people are really liking this. So that was quite cool to hear.
Oh, wow.
And so I came back and the keg was just about gone by then. And the feedback was overwhelmingly positive, with a few people thinking it was too thin and a few people saying they'd like a bit more hop. Hmm. So, I think we, for a first effort at a pretty unconventional beer, I think we did quite well there, James.
Yeah, you were a bit skeptical when we were first talking about this concept, because you didn't know what your patrons would think about a low alcohol beer.
No. So Hamilton is, to put it kindly, quite agricultural. It has been called a cow town, to put it unkindly. And there's a long history here in Hamilton of, you know, classic Kiwi values, like value for money. You know, you've got to get as much as you possibly can for your dollar. And so people come into a tap room and they buy a, you know, they pay $8 for a pint of eight New Zealand dollars, that is. I don't know what our pesos are worth these days in your money. But the, yeah, people want to get a buzz from that, you know, and whereas I'm the other way around. I do not care. I'm interested in flavor, and I think most sort of beer people are these days. But Hamilton's still a little bit regressive in that regard. Luckily, our taproom customers are very good people. It's an interesting mix of locals who have, you know, grown up drinking what their dads drink and not straying too far from that, and beer people who have come simply because they're excited to have a brewery near them. And so we get a mix of the, what do you mean it's only 1.7%, and, oh, this is really good, I can have six of these. And I would have liked to have been here to see more of the reactions. I saw a few after I got back, but it certainly seemed about 50-50 from when I came back.
Well, I think if I were to do this particular recipe again, I might either and, you know, it's not good scientific approach to change two variables, but I might boost up the amount of malted rye. Yeah, because malted rye does have quite a bit of body to it. You know, it's quite slimy or snotty, you know, in the, yeah. If you put too much.
That was what I was afraid of. So that was sort of the 40% goal was, you know, I was a little afraid we'd get a little of that snotty texture and that would be off-putting. But yeah, you're absolutely right. If I was doing it again, I'm with you 100%.
And I might also try switching back to from torrefied wheat to, although this was a good beer, in my opinion, switch from torrefied wheat back to malted wheat just to see if that has an impact as well. You know, just because, you know, and I don't have anything to compare side by side, but it seems like to me that on similar recipes in the past, that we got a teeny bit more body with, you know, the malted wheat over this version with the torrefied wheat. But again, you know, I can't complain. Like I say, I've been sipping on this, you know, while we've been talking, and it's completely satisfying to me as far as, you know, the body and the flavor and the aroma. It's just a fun little beer, and I haven't made any inappropriate jokes or stumbled over my words yet. So
there's still time.
So is this the kind of concept that you think you would try again?
Yeah, I'm actually, I almost want to do a series of these little rye-based beers and just, as you were suggesting, play with a few more of the variables. I think I'd probably want to get the alcohol up a little, just maybe 2.5 to 3%. Mm-hmm. I just feel like you do need a little bit of alcohol. It helps contribute to the body. It helps carry some of those flavors and blend those flavors together. I often notice if I'm drinking a low or zero alcohol beer that, you know, they almost taste unpolished. They taste like you can very much separate the malt from the hops. And I think the alcohol acts as a nice sort of a glue or literally a solvent to sort of, you know, mix them together.
Well, and I was going to say that. I was going to use that word solvent, wondering if your expectations of the hop utilization, especially with the dry hopping, I wonder if the lack of alcohol had a role with that.
Yeah, I didn't consider that at the time. I only considered it after the fact when I was drinking it. But yes, I think you're exactly right. I think that's certainly what could have happened. I'm going to have to put you to work, James. You're good at coming up with these theories and justifying some of my terrible beers. Well, this is why.
Here's philosophically, let me pull this out of my rear end as a reason.
Pull away. I'll wait.
Well, it was a fun project, and I've still got some in the keg, which is a good thing. And especially, you know, because we haven't talked about the lower calories, but with Thanksgiving as we're talking, you know, coming up this week, I've got plans to we're scaling down as far as the number of people. There's only going to be just the three of us here at the house, you know, because we're not traveling this year for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm scaling up my pie production and things like that. So I need something with lower calories in the liquid realm.
Does scaling up pie production mean you're making one gigantic pie or a bunch more smaller pies?
This has been a blast, and I appreciate your reaching out to me and having the opportunity to connect. You know, maybe we can do something similar again.
Oh, yes, please. I mean, thank you, James. It's been great to do this with you. As I say, it's been a long time. I feel like it's been a long time coming. I originally wanted to do it right when we opened the brewery, and it's taken me this long to find the time and actually realize my long put off ambitions. So, no, it's thank you again. It's been awesome.
Well, stay tuned. I appreciate it, Greg.
Cheers.
Well, thanks again to Greg, and as always, to Steve of stevesbrewshop.com. What a fun thing. By the way, I did some digging, and according to my notes, it was listener Wes Furtado on Facebook back in 2012 who came up with the Rye Wit name. So appreciate that, Wes. Very, very clever, and I should have thought of that. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com, or just fill out the contact form at basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us. There are a Patreon page. Special goodies always coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.